Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Now, to talk Nashville Predators, Len Gleno.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. You heard it, John Glennon in studio with us. Talking Nashville Predators hockey. The win last night, 3-2 over Colorado. Returning home tomorrow night, 8:30, with a chance to close out the series. John, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
What, start with the goalie interference. I mean, letter of the law, it's goalie interference, but it sure seems to me
please
like...
Please define goalie interference.
They've turned things into a dainty game in front of the net, in a game where people are plowing each other all over the ice.
It has certainly become the catch rule, if you will, the NFL catch rule of the NHL. It becomes hard to define. It seems to change with every game. To me, I went over the rule again last night in the rule book and the pieces that caught my eye. Contact, whether incidental or otherwise, shall mean any contact made between or among a goalkeeper and attacking player, whether by means of stick or any part of the body. And then certainly if an attacking player initiates contact with a goalkeeper and is credited with a goal, and the goalkeeper's in his goal crease, the goal is scored, the goal will be disallowed. So to me, if you go letter of the law in this situation, I think, in my opinion, you have to turn that one around. Now, it's a weird situation, one that I really can't say I'd seen before, because the puck was laying flat on Pecorine's pad as his leg was in that butterfly
flattened
position. I don't think it had stopped moving, but...
It seemed to be secure to me. Even if it had not stopped moving.
I don't think it's secure if it's
It's a very, very gray area, but that's the whole question. Does that mean is it open season on a goalie then? If a puck is laying on his pad, you can just go in and hack and whack and bang away.
I don't think it's open season for contact, but I think it's open season for trying to shoot it into the net.
Well, but they weren't shooting at that point. If there's a puck laying on his pad, the only reason that puck
moved
comes off the pad and into the crease is because it's nailed, knocked by either a skate or a stick.
That's how I saw it too, John.
Yeah. So to me, if you go on letter of the law and if you have precedent set, you know, by the situation we talked about, you know, or earlier with that Florida game with Victor Arvidsson was somewhat similar. You know, his stick went into Roberto Luongo and at least in theory created the loose puck, and that goal, Philip Forsberg's goal, was disallowed at that point. So I think to me there was enough similarity there that you could argue that goal should have been overturned as well. But real, like I said, it's a real gray area because I don't know if I've ever seen a puck lying on a goalie's pad. The kind of the side of the pad is his leg is lying flat.
Well, and I agree with you, John. And let's go with the logic side of this also. And I also agree with Paul. I mean, regardless of how soft the contact was, I'll ask you this question. Do you think there's any chance that puck comes completely loose for a goal without the contact from Colorado? Does Pecorine, do you believe he locates the puck at some point and covers it up with it sitting right there? Do you think that they would have scored?
Yeah, you can certainly make that argument. Yeah, I don't think it comes loose. I think that the whistle is blown at some point. But you can make the argument. It's like I said, it's a weird case. You can make the argument too. Okay, it was there, but it wasn't necessarily possessed. The puck wasn't covered. You know, obviously when the puck is covered, the official makes that call. So it's a real borderline. You know, you can read into it, but really both ways. But to me, again, it's the contact in the crease that creates that loose puck. And yes, it wasn't a ton of contact, but if that is the letter of the law, then to my way of thinking, you know, that's not a goal.
Let's hit Forsberg here. The two goals, the goal in game one, spectacularly skilled. The goal last night, spectacularly strong and fast. Between the two of them, we've seen everything he has to offer. In terms of that depth of skill set, how unique is he in this organizational history I mean, there's a stretch of 8 or 10 years where you covered this team where I'm guessing you did not see something like that from the home team.
No, certainly not. You know, there have been skilled, very skilled players, you know, ever since probably year 4 or 5 for the Predators. You go back to the likes of a Paul Kariya or someone like that. But again, the combination, as you mentioned, not only the skill of a guy like a Paul Kariya, for instance, but the power of a bigger man. Yeah, he's not a huge guy. He's probably, a fairly regular sized guy, but he has learned to use his body both offensively and defensively. We've seen that famous reverse Philip Forsberg butt check so effectively over the years. He's really perfected that. But he is also, I think especially this year, he's perfected that ability to position himself to get around defenders and hold them off. It's almost like a receiver in football. Once you get that opening, you hold that guy behind you and you create that space. And he has done that brilliantly. You know, we've seen smaller skilled guys. We've seen some bigger player like a Jason Arnott, for instance, who's a big goal scorer. But the combination, I think, is unprecedented. And let's remind ourselves too that I believe Philip Forsberg is 23 years old.
Yeah.
So we're just seeing Philip Forsberg's career really get going now.
They traded Erad for him, right?
Erad and a prospect named Michael Latta, who never has come to much. So I think every time that Philip Forsberg does something in the Washington Capitals fan, I know this because I know a lot of Washington Capitals
he
fans.
He was a Washington
back
Capitals
in the,
fan.
Back in my home neck of the woods, it drives the Capitals fans.
Was that the Caps getting Erat for a playoff run where they needed a veteran piece?
It was.
And of course, they didn't go to the Stanley Cup or win it.
No, because that's what the Capitals do, come up short.
I love that shot.
Yes, it's true.
Paul smirking, too, after that.
It's sad to say, but... and Erat looked like, okay, if you've only got a certain window to win with the Capitals and you want to add a veteran guy, a good two-way player, Erat looks like a decent pickup. But there were some questions asked at that point about Forsberg's speed. You know, everybody knew he had the skill set and the shot, but there were some questions, okay, does this guy have the speed to make it? Well, he's not a blazing fast player, but that certainly has not slowed him a bit. So clearly a very one-sided trade in that regard, perhaps the most one-sided impact trade in the history of the Predators.
Well, he's able to have a finesse quality about his movement, but also play very physical at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a combination of both that allows him the great positioning for some of these moves he's pulling off.
Right. Yeah, and that's what we were saying. I think those moves that he has shown in this series have really illustrated kind of the power forward theme that we've seen with Philip Forsberg. It's not just a skill set to stay on the perimeter and find a good shot, but it's driving the goal, getting the best shot available. And what's incredible to me is the chances that he takes on the ice, the thing, and I think Scott Hartnell was the one who said it the other day. He said some of the things that Philip Forsberg does on the ice, Scott Hartnell can't even comprehend trying, it's not as if he's doing them at a slow pace. You know, when he tried that lacrosse style move, towards the end of the season, he was going full speed, basically going behind the opponent's net, picks it up on his stick and tries to whip it in. And then the move on Samuel Girard earlier in the series where he takes it between his own legs, puts it between Girard's legs, and then beats the goalie. The thought process to get to where he does is amazing, let alone to actually execute it.
Well, and then just trying to watch, I think NHL Network did an in-studio piece where they tried to diagram the play in between the legs in slow-mo in studio. And they had a hard time doing it,
slowing it down,
walking it through the move.
It really is. Yeah, it's hard to, and as you say, he's going full tilt.
Yeah.
And the thought process the split second thought process, hey, why don't I take it between my legs, put it between his legs, flip across the goalie and knock it in, in a second or two time. It's just, it's amazing.
You know, every championship team out there, they have a bunch of guys who have roles, they're well-defined, and they know those roles. Do you feel like PK Subban, that he knows that his role is to instigate not just the other team, but also the opponent's crowd in games? And has he embraced that? Does he like that part of his game. There were times last night where I don't know if he was calling for teammates to come over. It looked like he was motioning to the crowd to keep booing him when he was behind the net setting up a play. He seems to be a guy that thrives under those circumstances.
He is not. We know this about P.K. Subban. He does not shy away from a spotlight, whether that is on the ice, whether that is off the ice. He's a guy who's very, very comfortable with a lot of attention.
And like the show, he's fueled by hate. We saw that out last night.
It's a PK thing.
Yeah,
maybe that's the situation. But he's no problem playing certainly the physical game. We have seen that. And I think he likes to get under the opponent's skin. There's no doubt. I don't think it was the wisest thing in the world he did the other night with the kind of the soft punch to the back of McKinnon's noggin. But nonetheless, those kinds of things are going to happen in the playoffs. And honestly, if they're going to happen, you'd rather be the one doing it than having it happen to you. Initiate rather than get caught retaliating in that kind of situation.
Speaking of retaliation, Ryan Hartman last night. I would want to retaliate too after if that were to occur and happen to me. But at some point, don't you have to pick your spots better than what he did?
You absolutely do. It's a very difficult role that guys like Ryan Hartman play. Because you talk about instigators, that is his job. He is an instigator. He has to start things. He has to get under opponent's skin, and he has to try to draw penalties in that regard. But part of your responsibility when you have that kind of role is not to lose your temper, not to run out of patience yourself, and not to retaliate. And sometimes Ryan Hartman comes up short there. Now, as you say, I think any male who watched what happened to Ryan Hartman, I think not once but twice last night, would have gone, I guess, nuts.
Well said.
A fitting word.
Well done.
Yes, there in that situation. But you just can't. And especially, it's one thing to retaliate and grab the stick. It's another thing after that to get the roughing call, to grab the opponent, toss him down, and get that second call. And, Ryan Hartman, there were some times when Ryan Hartman was in Chicago, I think, where he kind of got in the doghouse a little bit with Joel Quenneville, the Blackhawks coach, because he took maybe one or two more penalties than he should. That was one of the reading some of the clips out of Chicago, that was maybe one of the reasons that they thought he might be expendable. They got a little bit tired of that, or at least Joel Quenneville did. So he's got to be careful. And it's a tough role, and he does it very well. He's very good at getting under opponent's skin, and he's very good at drawing penalties, but you have to make sure you can't, if you're going to take penalties, it obviously negates the good that you're doing in drawing penalties. So he's got to be very careful in those situations.
Well, it's the charging yes. call that's going to get him removed for a game, right? Most likely.
It would not be a shock. Yeah, I mean, you have to be in that situation. You know you're already a man down. They've already whistled a penalty. You know you're going to be down 5-on-4. You can't take that kind of a chance. This wasn't a preventing a goal, in the crease, slashing a guy's stick to prevent him from knocking it in. This was kind of taking a bit of a run at a guy at the blue line, and you can't do that knowing you're already going to be a man short. You can't take that kind of a risk. And that's what he did, and they're 5-on-3 at that situation. The Avs score a goal, the place is going crazy, and it's a brand new game. And the Predators had completely controlled the game up until that point.
Pred started slow in the first three games, and everybody kept saying, why not come out and be the aggressor in a game? They did that last night and played much better. Through four games, the question keeps arising, why can't the Preds be more disciplined? How can they not stay out of the box? Is this something that they can simply shut off, just like they did with the slow starts, or is this just who they are right now, which is an undisciplined team?
Unfortunately, if you base what you watch on the regular season as well in the playoffs, it kind of is who they are. They started off especially poorly this season in that regard. They got a little bit better, probably the kind of the middle third or so of the season, and then it started creeping back into their game as well. When they ended the season, they had the most penalty minutes. I think they were averaging over 11 minutes a game penalties at the end of the regular season. And that average has gone up in the playoffs. It was 12 going into last night, and I think they took, I believe, 14 penalty minutes last night as well. So as much as it's been hammered away to them, as much as they know it's a problem, it does not seem to be getting better. And I would agree with you, obviously, in terms of the other issue coming out quick, they were much, much better, worlds better in the first period than they had been in the past. But unfortunately, that the penalty situation remains, and they're lucky that they should be commended for their penalty kill. They've killed 14 of the 16 power plays, and the only two goals have been 5-on-3s on the power play. But you don't want to keep, you know, Colorado's got a top 10 power play during the regular season. You don't want to keep giving them chances.
John Glennon in studio with us. Ekholm and Subban had their best game against that top line last night. Ekholm seems to play his best hockey in the postseason. Is there anything in your coverage of him that you can point to as to why that is?
Not precisely. I think he is a guy that responds well to a challenge. I think he's also becoming, or he has become over the past few seasons, an increasingly physical player. And I think that helps him in the playoffs when things get that much more physical and intense. I think that helps him as well. Sometimes I think it's also, he tends just to get noticed a little bit more in the playoffs. He's always a very good defenseman. You know, he's if he wasn't on a team with the three others, Subban and you know, Ellis and Yossi, I think he would get even more recognition as being one of the better defensemen in the game. But yeah, he's been strong. And if we remember back to last year's playoffs, you know, he and Subban were an outstanding shutdown duo in last year's playoffs as well. So you're right. He certainly has picked things up even in the playoffs.
How significant, just as things compound over the long haul, to save themselves a trip back, save themselves another game in altitude and adjusting to all of that. If you're compounding all of that, and this is the team that we think it is, needs to finish things off tomorrow night, I would think.
Yeah, I agree. And they've been, you know, when you look at last year, with the chances they had to eliminate another team in the playoffs, they were 3-1 in those situations. So for the most part, they took care of business when they were 3-1. And then I noticed last night Steve Lehman had a good nugget as well. I think in any kind of elimination situation at Bridgestone over the last 2 years, they've been 6-1, I believe, whether they're facing elimination or about to eliminate an opponent. So they have been pretty good at taking care of business. But I think especially given the fact that it looks, you'd have to guess or think that Winnipeg is going to advance in the next game as well. They go back home with a 3-1 lead. The Wild don't have Ryan Suter. The Wild don't have Zach Parise. So it certainly looks at this point like the Winnipeg Jets are going to advance quickly. You don't want to give them an extra couple of days to rest up for a playoff series with the Predators. You don't want to have to go back, you know, a long plane ride, deal with the altitude situation again. And of course, with every playoff game, especially one that's been nasty like this, you open yourself to another situation where you could get an injury. You know, we saw a couple of the Preds leave the ice last night and come back. But, you know, obviously every time you play a game in the playoffs, you're opening yourself up that much more to an injury situation. So, yeah, I think you'll see another purposeful start by the Predators tomorrow night. I think they're very ready to end the series and move on.
Austin Watson has been excellent in this series, John. And maybe, I mean, he's getting credit, but maybe not enough credit for the impact he's had. And he's had a point in each of these games. He had 7 hits last night, I believe. He's playing at a very high level right now.
Last year, too, if I remember correctly. Is he a playoff guy?
You're right. Yeah, he's come up big in both the playoffs. And we shouldn't discount his regular season this year either. He had a great regular season for a guy who was playing mostly on the fourth line. He had 14 goals, which is tremendous. I think he had 4 shorthanded goals during the season. But, yeah, he's come up even bigger during the playoffs. And I think maybe a couple reasons for that. One is he's been playing on that shutdown line, Watson, Sissons, Bonino. He's been playing on that very tight checking line, which has been going head-to-head with the Colorado's top line. And Colorado's top line has been on the ice so much that this line has been, that Preds line with Watson has been on the ice awful lot. You look at the regular season, Austin Watson was averaging about 12 minutes a game. In the playoffs, it's gone up to 15. So he's had a considerable amount, you know, more opportunity out there. But and then the second thing, in the playoffs, when we see these games, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the games become increasingly more physical. There are more battles for space. He's the kind of guy that thrives in that kind of game. He's turned himself into such a good physical battler over the years that I think that really comes out in the playoffs. But, you know, I think what's interesting about Austin, too, and we may have talked about this before, but I think people forget, it's easy to forget, that this guy was a first-round draft pick, you know, several years ago. You know, he kind of got a little bit lost in the shuffle, was actually placed on waivers before the 16-17 season. No one claimed him. And I can remember one time this year I was asking him, you know, he had scored so many shorthanded goals in a row. And I said, boy, are you kind of surprising yourself with how many shorthanded goals you scored, how well you've played? And he sort of laughed and he said, no, I used to be a pretty good player. You know, so you do recall at that point that, yeah, this guy was a first round player. This guy did have three seasons of 20 goals plus in the AHL. But he is getting it done all over the, not only offensively, but going head to head with that Avs top line as well. He's having a great series.
One of the great storylines all season with this team has been its ability to respond after a loss. You know, there were not many consecutive losses or strings of losses throughout the season. They always responded when they hit a little rough patch of adversity. And there was a lot of talk, a lot of buzz about Colorado getting back into that series, cutting it to 2-1. And then to have the response that they did with the best start of the series and more energy than we've seen in this series, that to me, that deserves more credit, too. Their ability to put whatever happened behind them and immediately respond and get ahead of the storyline.
I think, to me, that was a classic case of learning your lesson after a loss, because really those first three games, the first period had been such a poor start in all three of those initial games. But the Predators didn't change after games one and two. You'd have to think, why? Because they ended up winning. And it's hard to get the message through, I think, when even if you did start slowly, well, Pecorine kept you in the game and you eventually came back and won both those games. But in game three, when you start out slowly and boom, you're down 3-0 after the first, you never come back and you're really embarrassed for the most part. I think it's a lot easier for that message to sink in. Hey, we got to get in this game right away, right out of the start. And I think that's what we saw. Boy, you know, I think in the first 10 minutes, 23 shot attempts for the Predators in the first period last night. And, you know, they'd been outscored 5-0 in the first periods going into last night. And they got the only goal last night and could have had more. So I think certainly they realized a new mindset was in order. And give them credit, they came out with a much more aggressive attitude and it paid off.
I know he hasn't had a lot of help at times, but how would you rate Pecorine's play so far through this series?
I would say good. You know, I'm not sure it's been as good as we've seen Pekka through most of the regular season, but I would say good to very good for the most part. You know, I don't think there are a lot of goals that I've seen. You look at it and you say, wow, I bet Pekka wishes he had that one back again. You know, normally his save percentage is higher than we've seen it in the first four games. That is true. But I think the Preds have surrendered some pretty good chances and those goals, you know, especially the ones that we saw come at him in the first period of game three, when the Avs had that great start. I don't really think there was a whole lot he could have done. So to me, Pekka has been, as I'd say, I'd give him maybe a B, maybe even a B plus. So far, I don't think you know, much of the defensive struggles were on him. I think they've been giving too many good scoring opportunities and good chances to the Avalanche.
Did you notice much of Cale Yarncroke last night in his return?
Yeah, not a ton. I wouldn't say. You know, which probably expected. You know, a guy's been out for several weeks, and that was his first time back, and he didn't get a lot of ice time, which again is expected. I think he got probably about 11 minutes of ice time, and you know, your conditioning is not going to be as good as you'd like it coming back after several weeks. So I think that was probably by design that he didn't get a ton of ice time.
If Hartman is out for a game, do they go with Hartnell or do they turn back to Salamaki?
Interesting question. I kind of lean towards Salamaki in that situation, and the reasoning there is because of the speed factor. I think as good and experienced a player as Scott Hartnell is, and as valuable as he's been for the Predators, you know, he scored some big goals, and he can certainly contribute. He's a physical player. I think the speed of Colorado is so great, you'd prefer the quicker player in this situation, and for the role that he would be playing too, you know, likely a fourth line situation, you're probably going to get more in that role out of a Salamaki.
He had that bad penalty, right, earlier in the series.
Salamaki,
yeah,
it runs together. They've all had a few bad penalties from time to time.
I guess Hartnell would bring more of the veteran presence there.
Yep.
Vern Fiddler voted for him yesterday when we had him on as a guy to put in the lineup.
Yeah, you can certainly make a good argument for Hartnell, as you said, the great veteran experience. He scores goals and he's not out of place in a fourth line situation entirely because he can play a good defensive physical game, but. Yeah, to me, I guess the one characteristic of that makes Salamaki stand out in my mind is just the speed. You want to be able to keep up with a very quick Avalanche team.
Is Mike Fisher at a disadvantage speed-wise in this series when he's on the ice?
Yes, I would say he is. You know, I'm not trying to necessarily discredit Mike Fisher. He's a very good player. Speed has never been, you know, his greatest asset. And again, this is a young Avs team. These guys are flying up and down the ice. Mike, to his credit, I think Mike Fisher has learned over the past few years to learn ways to play fairly well, despite the fact he's going up against quicker guys. You remember in last year's regular season, for instance, I thought he had a really good regular season. And obviously that included going up against some younger guys as well. So, yeah, it's not an ideal matchup for a guy like Mike Fisher. He would probably be more comfortable in like an Anaheim kind of series from last year, where very physical, very tough, and so forth. But he's a wily vet, so he's learned how to play with some of these younger guys.
John, tell us what you're working on. Where can we find it?
All over the place. Yeah, we've got Nashville Ledger. We've got some stories. In fact, a story coming out today on a couple guys we just talked about. Austin Watson and Colton Sissons, and how they've kind of reverted to their goal scoring ways that they used to have. Doing a podcast that should be up later today, the Southern Fried Hockey Talk.
Nice.
Podcast. Yes. And of course, from the, Department of Never Too Early to give a plug, my book, 100 Things Predators Fans Should Know or Do Before They Die, will be coming out in November. And if you're really fired up, you can pre-order on Amazon even as we speak.
This list seems incomplete to me and lacking the thing that should be first on the list. I don't know. You're playing the game very poorly here.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah. And a weekly regular appearance at PaulKuharsky.com.
That's right. The crown jewel.
He knew you were going to plug that.
If you don't mention it first, next time you're off the radio.
Well, it's, you know, I tend to mention the jobs that are better compensated first. That's
I don't blame you. Well done. Well done. Compensate this man better, Paul. If you want top billing,
how am I going to buy that tape recorder we talked about? How am I going to buy that?
I have four old tape recorders that are newer than your tape recorder that I donate.
Old Bessie, so reliable.
John, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
That was Glenn on Sports, Midday 180 Predators correspondent.